I'm Deontay Burton, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Hamadou Diallo.
Hey, I'm Danilo Gallinari.
I'm Chris Paul, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
What's Dort?
I'm not going to lie. I don't know what that was.
In English, bro.
I'm Darius Baisley, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I'm Steven Adams.
I'm Andre Robertson, and I'm down to dunk.
Yeah. On you.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We are part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me today, got Mikel Ibarra, as always, and special guest, Fred Katz. What's up, guys?
Wow. What a trio.
Did you just say what a trio about a group of people that includes yourself?
Oh, man. So the Thunder beat the Wizards 121-103. Fred is on because he is the Wizards expert. He's told me before that he thinks that he's probably the person that exists in this world that thinks the most about the Wizards outside of people that work for the Wizards. And I think that's true. So we have our Wizards expert here.
I think it's completely true. Yeah. I actually don't even think it's a hot take.
I, being somebody that produces your podcast, I think that I would agree. I would totally agree.
I just sit around thinking the way it could be 1 a.m. I could be lying in bed watching, like, I don't know, old episodes of Parks and Rec. And Ron Swanson could say something and I could be like, what if Bonga came over to help from the weak side to double in the post more? Like, what if they did that? And then I could just get up and call up Synergy and watch Bonga clips. And then I won't go to bed till 4. Those are my evenings.
It's amazing.
This is when you text me at 3 a.m. in the morning about Bonga's numbers. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, this is exactly what's happening. When you get texts at 3 a.m. in the morning, my time. So I guess what? That's 9 a.m. for you. You're like, you're starting your day, and I'm basically like rejuvenating for a second wind. Just like taking hits of Jerome Robinson isolation defense.
This is a true illness. This is a true illness that you have here, Fred. So Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had a nice bounce back game. 18 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. The passing today was great. I think part of it is that they were more focused, and part of it is that maybe the Wizards are the worst defensive team in the bubble. Which do you think played more into that, Mikel?
Well, I think that the good thing is the Wizard tried to play zone, and this is something that OKC struggled to play. They didn't do a good job, but at least it was schematically a defense that can put OKC into trouble. And I think that Shai was much better attacking the zone. They were better in finding guys off dribble drives and off of like hockey passes. So I think that even if the defense that the Wizards play was kind of bad, very bad, it was still a good exercise for Shai to play against that kind of defense.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was good for them to get a look, because I mean they've struggled. Like Miami played zone and just absolutely destroyed OKC. I know they're missing some players, but still, like they looked really bad, and it was good to see them to play well. And so part of that too is that they had Mike Muscala out there who shot the ball really well. You had Darius Baisley who was 5 of 8 from 3 today. When you're making threes, that helps.
Yeah, it helps. I mean, against the Grizzlies, they generated for a good part of the game the same kind of shots. They were just missing them. Baisley missed a lot of shots against the Grizzlies. He was very good tonight. But I think that the passing was at another level. The ball touched more hands, like the more guys were involved in attacking the zone. You generally don't want to attack as a straight drive. You want to to move the defense from one side of to the other with passing, with cross court passes and stuff like that. And I think that OKC did a better job. Again, the circumstances were like clearly different from the game against Memphis, but still, it's a good exercise.
Yeah, definitely. Darius Bazley became the youngest player in Thunder history today. Scored 20 plus points off the bench. He had 23 points, 7 boards, an assist, a steal, 5 of 8 from 3. I thought he started out the game just pretty bad. He had 2 fouls, like 2 really quick fouls once he came off the bench, and it looked like he was a little bit out of sorts, but he was able to refocus and played a really nice game. And the Wizards clearly were not worried about Bazley shooting threes at all, and he made him pay for it.
I like Bazley. I think he's the exact Thunder type that they go at, and I think if he can shoot, it vastly changes. If he can shoot well enough for people to guard him, it vastly changes his outlook, I think. Now, the thing that the Wizards did with him today, which I've seen them do with numerous people, which is the scouting report on Bazley, is you don't need to close out hard on him at the three-point line. You can give him three-point shots. He's pretty good at putting the ball on the floor on the rare occasions that somebody does come out at him hard. He's like quick for his size. You don't want to do that. But I thought with where the Wizards messed up today, which they do a lot with all their young defenders and a lot of their undisciplined defenders, is what they do is they take the message of, all right, this guy doesn't shoot threes, you don't need to close out hard on him, as, all right, we don't need to guard that guy, it's fine. So they just kind of left him alone, let him do his thing, and he was in rhythm on all those threes. And he wasn't just open, but he was in rhythm and he was unbothered. And I think sometimes with young defenders, what you see is, I don't need to close out hard on this guy, means I don't ever need to even try to bother this guy. NBA players are really good. Even guys who can't shoot can shoot if they're completely unbothered. Now he hit 5 threes. I'm not saying he'll hit 5 threes if you guard him like that every time, but I don't think the Wizards exactly helped themselves with the way that they defended him. But I like him. I think I could easily see him becoming a good player. He's very Thundery. He's very Sam Presti-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it might be fun to go through the young players, because there's a lot of young guys on the court today. And the Thunder threw out some very young lineups, and the Wizards have been doing that as well. Just kind of go through these players and maybe kind of rank them. I think SGA is probably easily the best player amongst all these guys. But we'll start with Fred. Who would you put second in this group? We're talking like SGA, Rui, Dort, Bonga, Troy Brown, Bazley, Hamidou Diallo. We don't count Nader. He's a fake young guy. Burton's a fake young guy. Do the Wizards have any fake young guys? Those are guys that like have only been in the league a couple of years, but they're like 27 already. Jerome Robinson.
I love the idea of a fake. Well, Jerome Robinson's only 23.
Yeah.
I love the idea of a fake young guy. I love displacing terminology we talk about with athletes to just real life. Like I like the idea of like a baby being born 2 weeks after its due date and then it being born and Andrew being like, nah, it's a fake young guy.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be born like 2 weeks ago. It's not really a baby. Why isn't he walking? Or like a baby coming out of the womb 2 weeks early and being fine and healthy and good. Being like, yeah, of course he's walking early. He came out of the womb early. I think I'd take Troy Brown. I think I would.
Second.
I like Troy Brown. I think so. Yeah. I think his game is becoming really far along. He's at like 17-6-5 in the bubble right now. Just turned 21 years old last week. He is not at all the best athlete of the remaining guys.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to end up being really skilled. And I think the other young guys, there is a floor on all the other young guys that we named, which I think is well below Troy Brown's floor. I think at this point we can say Troy Brown is going to be a good passer, a smart player. He's going to be good at running pick and rolls. He's already one of the best rebounding guards in the league. The guy's pulling down like 7 or 8 rebounds every single game.
Yeah.
He actually has a higher rebound rate than Rui Hachimura. His rebound rate is around 12% right now, which for a 1-2 guard is excellent. So he's one of the best rebounding guards in the league. I think he's going to get there as a team defender. He's never going to be a one-on-one shutdown guy because he's just not that kind of athlete. He's not that kind of power guy. But I think he's going to be a right play guy. And if the shot gets better, which it's better now than it was 5 months ago, and it's certainly better now than it was a year and a half ago. If he gets to a point where he's just like on a decent amount, on a decent volume of threes, he can shoot 39% on catch and shoots, and he can just shoot like well enough so that everybody doesn't have to go under those screens against him, whether those are pick and rolls or whether he's doing dribble handoff, whether he's running off them. I think he could be a really, really solid player. And I just, there are good players in this group. There are guys who I think will be good players, but I don't see like an all-star here. And like Bazley's got a higher ceiling than Troy Brown. Rui probably has a higher ceiling than Troy Brown. But to me, those guys are, their futures are still more volatile, you know? So yeah, I'll say, I mean, I might be wrong, but I'll say Troy Brown on that one. Do you guys think that's a wild take?
No, I don't think that is wild. I'm not ready to, well, I don't know who to put second, to be honest with you. I mean, Rui has his own issues. I mean, I think that, as you said, Rui is a much higher ceiling, but I thought that he could be better in this season. I thought his scoring could be better. His overall like NBA awareness could be better. There is something to say about Rui, though. He tends to have an adjustment period. He had a huge adjustment period from the time he came from Japan to Gonzaga, and then his first season and even the second season. But he became a star in the third. I wonder if we will see the same thing with Rui in the NBA, because it seems to me that he didn't adjust to the speed of the NBA game yet. And he didn't find his place. Or at least from the game I saw. So it's tough because you don't want to put Dort second nor Bazley. Dort, because I think that the ceiling is kind of set for him. Even if I like the fact that he... No. I mean, I don't see him becoming an all-star anyway. In the same way, I don't see Marcus Smart becoming an all-star. Yeah. This doesn't mean that he can be a very good starter. He's already a good starter. He can be a very good starter. I don't think that there is all-star ceiling for him. I don't think that there is all-star ceiling for Brown, but he plays a different role. Like, lead ball handler can be more valuable than defender that can shoot three and maybe handle the ball here and there. I think that Bazley has the chance to be better. But the floor is lower. I think the defense is good, but the consistency right now is not there. And I would be surprised if like for a guy like that is 20, he didn't play meaningful basketball for a year and he's playing good minutes in a good team now, but it still struggle with consistency, with the shooting and also with decision making. So I don't know. I mean, it's really a toss up between him, Hachimura, and Troy Brown. I think Dort is a tad lower again, mainly because of the ceiling. I think that if you look at the floor, Dort will be on the court for, I would say, the next 5 years at least, if he plays this kind of defense, because there is no way in any team that a guy like that doesn't play.
Hey fellas, are you prepared to unveil your summer bod? The beaches are opening, the sun is shining, and it's time to get manscaped. Manscaped is here to ensure your post-quarantine body is ready for the wild. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you level up your full body grooming game. They have forever changed the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0 that includes an essential lawnmower 3.0 that's waterproof, cordless, body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. I own the lawnmower 3.0 and it is a great product. I think it has a light on it for accurate grooming. And it's just a really well-made product. It is great. And inside the Perfect Package, you'll find Manscaped's Crop Preserver and Anti-Chafing Ball Deodorant and Moisturizer, because we know how painful chafing can be when you're wearing your bathing suit all day long. So make sure you use that. And also make sure that you get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC at manscaped.com. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with the free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code THEATHLETIC. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, which is a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. They're good. I've got some, and I wear them, and they're wonderful. So make sure that you get some, too, and go to manscaped.com today and use the code THEATHLETIC. I mean, I would say SGA, Troy Brown, Rui, and then one of the Thunder guys. Whether you think it's Dort or you think it's Bazley, I mean, I think that you could argue either one today. I think you'd probably pick Dort today because I think that Dort is going to play in the playoffs no matter what. I think Bazley will play, but I think that there's a better chance that you see Bazley just pulled from the lineup altogether in like a game five situation than it would be Dort. So,
I can see Dort playing alongside a 3-point guard, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like if you play the Lakers somehow and the Lakers go with an AD at center lineup with LeBron James at the four. I think that Billy will try Dort on him and just play the other 3-point guards.
Yeah. I don't know who else you'd put or who else like, you tried to put on him.
I don't know. I mean, there is more chance. You're right. I mean, if you look at the next playoffs, I do think that Dort will play more than Bazley. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the talent after that, it kind of drops off. Like you've got Hami, who's played well, but I still don't trust it. You have Terrence Ferguson, who played today and didn't shoot the ball well, but did play, which was encouraging. You have Jerome Robinson, who maybe we should talk about. Fred, should we talk about Jerome Robinson? He's played well in the bubble.
Jerome Robinson has been good enough in the bubble that we have to at least talk about him.
Yeah.
Like Jerome Robinson, I haven't checked after this game, but he was what today? He was 7-for-15 from the field, 4-for-9 from three. I think he had like a 46-37 field and three-point shooting line coming into this game in the bubble, which is like totally respectable. And he's doing it on a high volume of threes. His shot selection is getting better. He takes too many mid-range pull-ups for my liking, but it's getting better. And I know that's something the team is actively working with on him. If he shoots at this level, like he's an NBA player, he's a rotation player.
Yeah.
If he can shoot, he can do some stuff off the dribble. He's got to become a better passer and pick and rolls if he's going to play the way he plays. Cause I think he struggles with those reads, but like it's his second year and he's had very little NBA playing time. He didn't play very much with the Clippers, and the Clippers also never really practice. Yeah. Doc Rivers doesn't practice, so he didn't have time. So I think, he should be in the conversation. He should for sure be in the
conversation. Before or after Isak Bonga?
I would say after because I don't know how real the shot making is. Mm-hmm. So
it was really college.
Yeah, it was real in college. Though that's what's interesting about them. He was, when he came out of college, he was an offense first guy, right? And then the only reason he played 11 minutes a game or whatever it was with the Clippers was because he was a good one-on-one defender. And so the Clippers would use him in those situations and he couldn't hit jumpers and he missed a lot of stuff around the rim and his offense just completely went away. And I don't know what this means that it's happening in the bubble. The whole thing with him has been confidence his whole time. Mm-hmm. He needs confidence. What everyone with the Wizards says, and it's what everyone with the Clippers said, he needs confidence. It's like, I don't know how to grade the fact that he's now making shots when there are no fans there if the whole thing with him was confidence. You know, I don't know. It could mean that he just figured it out. It could totally mean that. It could also mean that he's making shots because there are no fans there and he's not psyched out by 20,000 people. When he gets back with 20,000 people in the arena, it's back to being a 35% shooter. And his defense is not good enough to hold up 35% shooting. So I don't know. So I would say Bonga ahead of him now. I think Bonga's got the higher ceiling because I could see Bonga turning into a really good defender. He's only 20 years old. Mm-hmm. I could see Bonga turning into a really good defender, but Bonga's still so raw. Like he's still so raw. The shot is not there. The release is still slow. His body is not there. But he has moments defensively where I'm like, that was really good. Like, mm-hmm. fundamentally, that was so good. Like, he's learned to use his length well. His footwork has gotten good. You just see it as like, oh, okay. Like, that was really good. Like, I could see Bonga's not going to be a star or anything, but I could see him being one of those guys who's just a really good role player on a good team, you know? And I could see Robinson becoming that, or if he goes back to being a 35% shooter, then he's not a rotation piece. So I don't know. It's too small a sample to analyze at this point with him.
Mm-hmm. Today's show is sponsored by Artifact. Artifact sets you up with one of their professional interviewers to capture stories about important people or things in your life. Think about it like a podcast episode about whatever you want. With Artifact, you can capture family history with parents and grandparents, talk about friends and family as a birthday, wedding, or anniversary gift, both about how they made a difference in your life, and also you can share some hilarious stories. I ordered my first Artifact to capture the kidney donation that I gave to my father-in-law. Step one, here's how it went. I went to heyartifact.com and I told them a few basic things about what I wanted the artifact to be about. Step two, then I answered a few pre-interview questions and scheduled my interview. The whole thing just took a few minutes. And then step three, I actually did the 30-minute interview. That was really easy. It was all over the phone. I actually did mine over the computer, which gave us a little bit better sound. But it was a great experience. The interviewer was really good. This was honestly a professional interviewer. They knew exactly what they were doing. And I feel really excited now to hear my artifact. I haven't gotten it yet, but I can't wait to see what they're able to do. I will be sharing that episode for you when it's ready. But for now, you can go to heyartifact.com and hear some awesome samples. There's a ton of ways to use Artifact to capture stories with your friends and family. Now, when you're ready to make an artifact of your own, use the promo code DUNK to get $40 off your first one. That's heyartifact.com and use the code DUNK for $40 off. The confidence guys scare me in the NBA, where it's like, yeah, his issue is confidence. I don't know how many of those guys work out in the long run.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. By the way, I know Thunder Twitter will come at me with pitchforks on this, but I'm still in on Terrence Ferguson.
Yeah, tell me why.
Yeah. I had a coach tell me once, it's something I always think about. I had a coach tell me once, when a guy is in a slump, people always look for basketball reasons as to why. They look for fundamental reasons as to why. And maybe there is a fundamental reason as to why, but often, even if there's a fundamental reason, that fundamental reason is stemmed by something going on off the court. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, Terrence Ferguson has gone through personal stuff this year. And I don't know for sure if that's what's affecting him. But when we see a guy have a down year and really kind of fall off a map, what seems like an inexplicable regression at such a young age, and we know he's going through something difficult personally, then it just makes me think, okay, well, like Occam's razor, you're going through a hard time in your life, that affects you in your job. And I just think back to what that coach told me, like, look it off the floor, look for the human reasons why someone would struggle professionally. Yeah. So let's see when Terrence Ferguson's life gets back to normal, let's see how he is then. I'm still in on Terrence Ferguson because I liked him before. I thought he was turning into a really good defender, mm-hmm. really yep. good. And his issue looks like he's just thinking about everything, right? Like his mentality is so different. Remember when he was a rookie and we would joke like, oh, Terrence Ferguson has never seen a shot he doesn't like. Mm-hmm. When was the last time he saw a shot he liked? Like 2018?
Yeah. So
I'm not jumping off the bandwagon that quick. I'm waiting to see. I'm looking at it a little more nuanced, and I'm waiting to see, like, okay, how's he going to be when things get back to normal? And I think it's totally possible that he still turns into a really good 3-and-D guy. Yeah. So I'm not out on him.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. It's totally fair.
I might be out on him for this specific playoff run. But I'm not out on him in the long run. Like, I don't think the Thunder should just give up on him.
I would. But it's tough. It's tough because you have to start contract negotiation basically next September, October, whatever. You can get him for cheap, probably, but do you want to lock in, I don't know, 2-point-something millions a year to just try if he's still good when you have other guys that you like, clearly, and that play the same spot? I don't know. It's tough because if you sign him to a contract, you need to give him space to be on the court. I know that Hami now is playing better, but if your long-term plan is to try to play Ferguson more, he needs to get 20 a night. He needs, if you want to get him back the point where he was, even last season in the playoffs against Portland, there was a game where he hit 5 threes. I mean, that player is useful, especially in a team where, like, players will find you in the corner for an open three. And so it's tough to say, well, I don't want the Thunder to just give up on him, but they also have other guys that they like and they deserve the same amount of time to develop. And it becomes tricky with a guy like Ferg that needs to get a contract in a year, basically. So I wonder if the solution for Ferguson is just try another team that needs a player like that, that has more space, more room, more playing time for him, and just pull the trigger. I think that he can be similar to Jeremy Lamb, who was a good player. The Thunder surely give up on him soon, but because they had probably other plans, they wanted to try other players. He was not a done, like a player that had no place in the league back then, but the best chance for him was to move him in a place where he could get 25 a night with less pressure.
Yeah, no, I think that makes total sense. So I guess that Dennis Schroeder was telling people, so he was in the virtual crowd today, and apparently he was telling people in these waiting rooms that he's coming back to the bubble tomorrow. And so that would mean that he would be able to play for the Thunder in roughly 5 days. So, which is good timing for Schroeder to get back right before the playoffs start. But yeah, so that's apparently the rumor that's going around about Dennis Schroeder. They were also missing Steven Adams and Nerlens Noel today. And Mike Muscala played in their stead and was very good. 14 points on 5-11 shooting, 4-8 from three. I thought he filled in really well. Anything else from today? It was a good bounce back game, but also against a mostly G League Washington Wizards.
Yeah, I think that we should at least mention the fact that Dort was again very, very good today. I like the fact that he never stops the flow of the offense. I said it probably too many times, but when you have a guy that defends at that level and understand the game, and he doesn't make too many bad choices on offense. And maybe you want like some of his like penetration straight line drives back because he's not as good in those situations. But overall, I think that his IQ is something that should be discussed more. And it's really, it seems to me that it's growing comfortable in his role.
Yeah, he fits really well. He's good with the group. Fits really well.
He's good. You think Steven Adams knows who he is yet?
Who?
What's Thorpe? <That's...
laughs> The full clip is so funny because
the greatest thing of all time.
I try to explain it to him, and he is just perplexed as to who it is. Like, who are you talking about? Like, look at Stuart. There's somebody as a Thunder staffer in the background that goes, he's on your team.
It's gotta be a bit at this point with Steven. Like,
yeah.
Remember with when
the Nicola thing?
Yeah, remember when he didn't know DeMarcus Cousins' first name? Just say he didn't know his name. And this is not like a Russell Westbrook saying who situation. It's clearly not meant as an insult.
Right.
He just, there's no way he could be, because I know Steven. Like, he studies scouting reports very intensely and watches film very intensely.
Yes.
Like, there's no way that he could do that and then be like, what, Cousins? What's his?
Yeah. It's got to be a bit. It's got to be a bit.
It's got to be. And he's so dry that it could plausibly be a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it could. Something else that could be a bit is this ad from Indochino. I'd like to get into the standings with the Thunder, because right now, if the playoffs started today, which is my least favorite sentence ever said on any radio or podcast, but they'd be matched up with the Houston Rockets. And we've talked about this on the pod for what feels like months and what could be months, that this is like the highest ceiling, lowest floor scenario for the Thunder. Fred, from an outsider's perspective, who would you favor in a Rockets Thunder series?
So this is fascinating to me, because it's not just great from the obvious narrative perspectives of Russell Westbrook against the Thunder and Chris Paul against the Rockets and the obvious stuff. Stylistically, like, I don't know what Steven Adams is going to be like, because let's assume the Steven Adams injury that he has right now isn't that serious, and he's back for the start of the playoffs, and he looks exactly like he did during the first four bubble games or whatever it was. Okay, let's just operate under that assumption. So Steven, throughout the year, his body tends to break down, and he just doesn't physically look like the same guy in April as he does in November, pretty much every year, right? And we've seen him have success in switchy sort of defenses, having to guard on the perimeter in major playoff series. But that was like 4 years ago. Right. And I haven't really thought of him as quick and as agile as he was during, say, the 2016 Western Conference Finals against Golden State. But if he can move like he's looked like in those four bubble games, I think that could potentially change some stuff for the Thunder. I think if he looks like 2019 playoff Steven Adams, 2018 playoff Steven Adams, I could see him struggling in that matchup. And I think they need him to be consequential in order for them to win that series. I think the big thing with them will be, how is Steven Adams going to play against that lineup and having to guard PJ Tucker in the corner?
No.
You just have Steven Adams basically play one man zone.
No,
is what you're saying.
Yes. I force Russell Westbrook to be a screener by having Steven Adams guarding him.
Yeah.
This is what I would do. Oh yeah. I mean, I would put Steven on Russ.
Well, you know what would be great? You know what would be great? I mean, the Thunder know every single tick that gets Russell to make a playoff series about Russell. So from a mental side, like, that is what you do if you're the Thunder, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You do the disrespectful, we're putting our center on you, because we know what you can do and we know what you can't do. Yeah.
I mean, if Russ becomes a screener for Harden, it becomes messy immediately and you have to change your scheme. But Russell never, never in his career became a constant screener for others. Like, this is not what he does. It's just not in his DNA to be a screener for others. And if you put Adams on him, then it's basically okay for Steven to switch on whoever screens for us, which will not be Harden. And so you have a favorable matchup, even with against a guy like Eric Gordon or Daniel House or whoever, you have a chance. And if Russ doesn't use a screen and just goes for his pull up and or drive, you have Steven dropping and you live with it. I would really try that. Or, as you said, like a 4-1 zone, basically, where you have like your centers that play zone. And but you cannot really do that because you have Harden. So you really have to make Steven the main defender of Russ. I'm not sure that Billy has the guts to do that. And even if that is the right choice, because probably I'm not thinking about the 99 other consequences, bad consequences for OKC if you put Adams on Russell Westbrook. But I'm thinking about it since, I don't know, last time that the Rockets played the Thunder. And I think you have to give it a try.
Yeah.
That's fair. I mean, that seems to me like a thing they go to every once in a while and maybe in fourth quarters, but not for an entire game.
Yeah, because Steven will be tired if you do that.
Steven, you have an opportunity to make Steven unbelievably exhausted if you play it right, if you're Houston.
Yeah.
And you do, if you're guarding Russ, like you are making Russ. It's not like the conventional will have your center guard the guy who can't shoot in the playoffs type of thing because of how often Russell has the ball. It's not a put your center on Andre Robertson kind of situation.
No, yeah.
You're still making Steven be remarkably active. And even if you let Steven sag off 10 feet off of Russell Westbrook, Russ can still drive by Steve. I'm not saying you're necessarily wrong. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if there's a perfect answer. It's just, it's tough. It's tough. And then when Russ drives by Steve, who's the backline help? Gallinari?
Yeah.
It's not Lou ideal. Dort.
Yeah, Dort.
Or maybe they just put Dort and Shea on Harden and Russ and they just try to.
You think Nerlens Noel becomes more important in that series?
No, because he'll be completely useless offensively. They will play him out of the court because he cannot get you anything down low. In terms of post touches, or he's not a great screener. He's a good screener, but not great. The Rockets switching everything takes away the lob. And so I'm not sure how much Noel, he's surely better in terms of mobility and he can be switchy for like a few possessions here and there, like he did last season against Lillard. But I'm not sure. I would probably bet that Muscala plays a lot of minutes if you play the Rockets because you need that. You need to expose everyone when the Rockets play defense, and you need to space the court the best you can. You already have Dort, and so they will probably already give him a lot of space. If you give him also a guy like Noel on the court, you are in trouble. With Steven, you can really try to post him up, especially if he's the version of Steven that we saw in the first few games.
Yeah. Fred, did you answer the question? Houston or OKC?
Oh, who would be favored? Yeah, I guess I didn't even answer the question. I just kind of started talking. And then we got into a whole conversation about Steven Adams and PJ Tucker. We somehow analyzed Nerlens Noel's usefulness in the series before we said who would be favored and answered the question directly, which honestly is the perfect way for a basketball conversation with me and Michele to go. I think Houston would be favored.
Who would you pick to win it? Like you're picking for the Athletic. Who would you say wins?
Who has home court? That was a joke. I think I'd say Houston in seven, but I wouldn't feel good about it.
Yeah.
I think it's really tough. It's a really tough series. Like I think so much of this stuff is, God, so much of it is matchups. Like Houston, OKC, and Houston, Utah would both be fascinating to me. Houston, Denver would be fascinating to me. Like that's why Houston went the route that they went, right? All of these teams have really good bigs that are central to what they do in the Western Conference. The Lakers have them. I mean, all these teams have really good bigs that are central to what they do. So I think I would say Houston. I'm just going off the top of my head. I could, if this happens, I'll delve into it deeper and do more research on this than just saying a name off the top of my head. So I think I'd say Houston, but I'm not as is the number one most intelligent thing to say on a recorded podcast that doesn't get edited. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, it is. I would probably pick the same thing, Houston and seven, but I don't know how many people would be surprised if OKC actually won that series, because I think that we've seen a lot from Russell over the past few years that says that you can get in his head in a playoff series, and what better team to get in his head than his former team and Chris Paul? I mean, I think that is a really interesting scenario. And then,
you know, what's really important for that series too. I mean, the Thunder have a guy that, if he's the same guy, was arguably the best James Harden defender in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like, if Andre Robertson is 2 years ago Andre Robertson, 2.5 years ago Andre Robertson, who was better at guarding Andre Robertson, like the James Harden types, James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, without fouling?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was better at that? I don't know if there was literally a defender in the league who was better at that. Dre is so good at getting his hand in and getting it out of the way in time. Unbelievable at it. And an amazing scouting report defender. So if he is, I have no idea how good he is at that now. I have no clue. There's no way for any of us to know with any confidence. But if he is still great at that, that is really big for them.
Yeah. One thing that I think if I had to bet, I would bet Houston even in six, because I do think that the talent gap is wide. They have two of the 20 best players in the league, and this accounts for something. And but Russ is Russ, and if you have like a lot of defenders that you can try to put on guys like him and Harden, and OKC has them. I mean, Shea is okay. You have Dort. You have Hami, you have Ferguson, you have Dre. You have a lot of guys that you can put on them for a few possessions, and see if it is their days, their day. I mean, if they have something to put on the court. So that, I think, is important. If one of these guys show up in a game, it could make a difference. And maybe Dre, if I have to bet today, I don't think that his first step is as good as before. And so it would be extremely tough for him to play a guy like Harden. But yeah, I mean, OKC has a lot of guys that can try to guard Houston star. But still, I mean, Harden can go for 50 in a game. And it could be just that. I mean, if his step back is like in the 30s, like high 30s, there's nothing you can do. So I don't know. I still don't know if Houston gets the 4 seed or the 3 seed, because I think that is still in place, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're 2 games back of the Nuggets, who won a big one yesterday.
Yeah. So, and loss column's not as important now.
Right.
Because they don't play the same amount of games.
Yeah.
It will be tough. It will be really tough. I mean, I think the only thing that will change this Houston-OKC matchup is if OKC wets the bed the rest of the way and the Jazz pull it together. But it doesn't.
Yeah, but OKC needs one, basically, and they clinch the 5 seed. If I did some calculation, and if they win one,
yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, the Thunder just have to, be very bad from here on out to get there.
Would you rather play Houston or Denver if you're the Thunder?
I think Denver just feels like a more benign matchup, right? Where it's like, okay, like if the Thunder lose, we know that that's a better team kind of thing. I don't know. There's too much emotion.
Let's talk. All right. This was a 2-part question that I tricked you into by posing as a 1-part question. All right. You never hear anybody. I want to hear one time. I want to hear somebody in a press conference. I want to hear a reporter raise their hand, get called on and say, yeah, coach, one part question.
One part.
just want to hear that. All right. Part two of the question. Sam Presti just resigned. You are tasked with taking over the Thunder. But right now, you're now leading the Thunder. You throw in the last two games so you can play Denver in the first round. Home court doesn't matter.
I think
it's just matchups.
I think yes, I would for as the GM, two reasons. One, I would love to keep the pick, and that would give me the best chance to keep the pick. And then I don't know, Denver is obviously a very good team. I don't know if those guys are going to perform in the playoffs. And the Thunder have a lot of guys too that we don't know if they're going to perform in the playoffs, but the volatility of the Houston series is emotionally going to be a tough one to handle. So, and especially as the GM of the Thunder. I mean, right now I'm just a podcaster. Then I'm the GM of the Thunder. Like the emotions that go into that, like, I don't know. I mean, do I carry the weight of the Harden trade on my shoulders as the new GM? I mean,
no.
So yeah, free. You do
to make
you
whatever.
No, you carry the weight. And you carry the emotional weight.
Yeah.
Because I know you. I know you, and I'm certain you would carry the weight.
I would definitely carry the weight.
That would be the first thing you would say. I would be at that press conference, at your opening GM press conference, and I would say, yeah, Andrew, one part question. What do you think of the Harden trade?
I would for sure talk a lot less at my press conferences. So not as much transcribing for you guys. Yeah,
the GM of the Thunder just released a statement. All it says is I'm down to Dort and he's not having a press conference about it.
He just ate Cinnamon Toast Crunch the whole time and just nodded.
Yeah, he started pouring milk at a press conference. There's nothing grosser to bring to a press conference than whole milk.
Just a gallon of milk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely have some kind of breakfast item. Just occurrence at a press conference for sure. I once in high school, somebody dared me to bring a toaster to history class and toast Pop-Tarts in class. And I of course did it. And so I'm always up for some kind of breakfast shenanigans. And as the GM of the Thunder, would definitely do that.
When I was in high school, one of my teachers, because I would always bring sweets to class. I forget the exact details, but one of my teachers, who I had a very joking relationship, and I was not a good student. One of my teachers made a joke about how I'm not going, like I didn't do my homework because I was too busy making deep fried Twinkies again. And it was a food joke, not a fat joke. And so the next day we had a test. And so just to further the joke, I actually went out and bought Twinkies and fried them in my kitchen at home in lieu of studying and brought them into the test and sat down. And my teacher thought it was hilarious. And then I did terribly on the test. And I was like, I don't know why I thought doing this. I'll be like, he'll think it's funny and it'll give me a good grade. And then I just did terribly because I didn't study the night before.
It's a part of the bit, though, right?
It's all part of the bit. It would be less test. Right. It would be less funny if I like aced it.
Yeah. No, you couldn't have aced it from there.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh man. Thanks for listening to Down to Dunk. Make sure that you're following Fred Katz and read Fred Katz on The Athletic. Please. It's great stuff. You can get 40% off at The Athletic if you go to theathletic.com/downtodunk. Also follow Mikelly on Twitter at Mikey Barra. Hope you guys have a great start of your week, and we'll talk to you guys again on Wednesday. What a way to end the show.